So we're working on the Oxfording Stories, called Oxfording Stories, Oxfording Pictures, and we're on picture story number 4 called Catching the Ox. And I thought, so usually we meet, the teaching team meets together, and we talk about what everybody's going to talk about, and I kind of missed that meeting because I was in a retreat, and so I'm going to have to wing it, just say whatever I want to say about this picture. So that's good. It's okay. You know I can wing it. So I'm going to talk a little bit about these stories and put some framing around it and then talk about catching the ox here. And I know we went through kind of like a overview summary of it last week, but so hopefully this is not completely all over again. But I think I probably look at it a little differently than most people do anyway. So these stories, to begin to see each picture as a story in and of itself, a practice. So it's not like the story is all 10. That's one way to look at it, true enough. But each one of these pictures are a story in and of itself. And you know what makes for a good story is you got to have some inspiration, some interest to draw you in, that you want to read the story, listen to the story, and some drama. That drama kind of helps us stay with it, like, ooh, I wonder what's going to happen. So each one of these pictures include some inspiring aspect of practice, and the shadow of that inspiration, which is the tension or the challenge or the difficulty within the same space. So this isn't like, oh, I want to get to picture 10. I want to get to the 10. And once I get to 10, I'm good. These ox herding stories are a way to begin to understand the nature of practice and to understand where you are in the practice. Whatever challenge you're having is probably interwoven with your possible attainment at the same time. So you can look at practice as each moment in time, whether you're challenged by it or not challenged by it, you're both at the place of attainment and challenge at the same time. That's the point, I think, of these stories, is to begin to see where you are in the practice. And I think I want to talk about it as where we are in a moment in time with practice. So one way you can look at the stories is, oh, what do I need to do to get to the next picture or the next story? What do I need to do? Or another way you could look at it is, oh, I'm not as good as I will be when I get to the next picture. I'm still stuck down here. But all of those ways of looking are conceptualizing your practice in a way that is not the true nature of the way wisdom unfolds. And so wisdom unfolds in a very gradual way, and it unfolds in its own understanding. So this wisdom that we're going, you may have great wisdom when you're sitting on the cushion, great a capacity to sit on the cushion. And then as soon as you get off the cushion, you can't find the Dhamma. You don't know where it's at. You thought you had it. You had it when you were on the cushion, and you can't find it when you get off the cushion. Or some people, they have great wisdom off the cushion. They can seem to see the Dhamma everywhere. But as soon as they sit down to meditate, can't find it. Can't do it. I'm lost. I just can't seem to do this meditation. And it is because if you think about the Dhamma itself, it's more like a diamond that has all these facets and views that we can see in different ways. That's what these pictures are pointing to. These different facets, these different ways we could begin to see the Dhamma in whatever it is that we're doing. So this struggle here is what happens when we catch the ox. And so up to this point, we've been searching, and we see it. Now we've caught it. And you can, you know, notice in the picture that if Dane will, actually, if Dane, if you take your screen off, then we can see the picture. Then we can see it. So you see that picture there in Dane's screen. This is a humongous ox compared to the little tiny rope and the little tiny practitioner. So in a way, oftentimes we approach Dhamma as if the Dhamma itself is way bigger than us, bigger than us. I can't do this practice. But I'm hoping that I can help you begin to look at this a little differently. That ox is not something outside of you. That ox is you. It's the potentiality of who we are as human beings. To be born in this human life, that is the potentiality of what we are as humans. It is enormous, the capacity we have and what we can do. And the Dhamma is the awakening of that enormous potentiality. That little bitty tiny yogi there, that little yogi is not you in your fullness. It's the egoic side of you. And the egoic side of you, each of us, is trying to control the enormous possibility of who we are. And it's using this little tiny rope is like using our historical conditioning, our historical understanding to control what is otherwise a liberated mind, which is free and completely within this world. I'll give you an example. If we think about the conditions that we live in right now, the world we live in. Just open our mind to all the crap that's going on. It seems enormous, way bigger than we can handle. And to the ego, there's too many problems. There's too much going on. And so we kind of use this little bitty rope trying to control all this stuff that's going on, and we feel overwhelmed by the realization of everything that we see. And the more we practice, the more we see. The more we practice, the more suffering we see. The bigger the world gets, the more like enormous. It is the nature of what the practice is. So when we try to take the enormity of our capacity and have our limited mind, the egoic mind, tell us what to do, it does not work. It does not work. So that little tiny yogi can't handle wars and climate change and the fear and all the anger that's in the world right now and the major panic about what's happening in this country and what the hell's about to happen and all of that. That little bitty tiny yogi can't handle it because that little bitty tiny yogi is limited in its understanding, in its conceptualization of everything. But the ox, which is not another being, the ox is the awakened side of us. The awakened side of us is equally enormous and can handle whatever exist in the world because the ox exists in this moment. It exists in what is in front of me right here, right now. It does not live in the fear of what is going to happen and what may or may not happen. It lives in the reality of my present reality right now. And in that reality, I can handle whatever's in front of me. I'm not quite sure how I'm going to handle what's coming up in the future. But today, this moment, right here, right now, yeah, I can handle it. If my son were to start coughing and going through some kind of medical emergency, I would be off this internet right here, and I would be in there with him, and I'd be taking care of him and doing whatever. if I sit here with my egoic mind and say, oh, will I, what will I do if Thaddeus gets sick? I don't know. I'd be scared. But if I step into the ox, the wisdom of this awakened mind, I know whatever happens, I'll be ready to take care of it. So the struggle that this picture is pointing to is that when we, in the picture before, got a glimpse of the possibility of this mind, the possibility that we could love all beings, the possibility that I could be with whatever, when we get a glimpse of that possibility, the egoic mind wants to seize it, control it, figure out how can I make that, how can I make myself be like that all the time? And so this struggle that we're having here is between the egoic's limited understanding and the liberation it sees. So I'm trying to stuff the Dhamma's wisdom into the life I already live. I want to figure out how can I be a better person? How can I keep my life exactly the way it is and be a better person? How can I live with the same greed, hatred, and delusion, habitual way that we all live? I mean, we're all, you know, all of us, including me, every teacher you know, we live out of greed, hatred, and delusion unless we're enlightened. So if you don't know if that teacher's enlightened, assume that teacher's living out of greed, hatred, and delusion. So there's this automatic root of wanting to get what we want and not have what we don't want, and just basically not wanting to see all the difficulty in life. How do I take this great, liberative, I'll be a great, nice person, really, really good, full of loving kindness. How do I stuff that being into my life the way it is? Keep my job, keep everything going the way it is, keep my little habits, keep doing the little things I do. How do I do that? And it's a struggle. What we are coming up against in this picture are the moments when our practice butts up against our life and we can't stuff it in and we can't use the little conditioning that we have in order to make it work. Each one of these stories are very, very, very important. That's what I want to really stress. It is not something's wrong with me because I'm trying to stuff my spiritual life into a life full of greed, hatred, and delusion. That is not the truth of this moment. The truth of this is to begin to see the struggles you're having. So when, let's say you're watching the news, I'll give you a perfect example. It happened to me last night. I'm kind of looking at social media, whatever, and I saw this thing about the end of Roe v. Wade, and all of a sudden I got all nervous and scared, and I'm like, what the hell? What's happening to us? And the mind just freaked out on all of this fear about what's going to happen with women. How can people think like this? Blah, 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 blah. It was just like a flood of it all of a sudden. And at first I was trying to like, no, don't think like that. Don't just let it be, Tori. Just, you know, you're going to get to give a Dhamma talk tomorrow. So just, you know, you got to get it right. Just be at ease and peaceful. I'm trying to do that. And it keeps knocking at me of all this fear about what's going to happen. And I just don't think I ever had this kind of political fear that I have. And so here I am in this struggle trying to be what the egoic mind thinks is going to be a great teacher, great yogi. You know, I got it. I'm going to get on the call and say, I got it. It was all easeful. I just went right through it. And then this thought arose in me that said, oh, this is it. This is the struggle that we have all the time. And really, I need to just accept the struggle. And I just remember sitting there saying, how could I explain this struggle to people tomorrow? Rather than trying to have the image of who I should be, instead, I was like, this struggle is the practice itself. That's what it's supposed to be. So there's an acknowledgement that I'm scared, and there's also this knowing that I can take care of whatever comes my way. And both of those things together, we cannot get there holding them both as a reality until we're willing to accept the struggle of catching this ox. This picture is trying to help us see that that struggle we're in is trying to control this ox. And it's a very necessary part of practice. Once we learn to see the struggle, that's when we are on the path to step into the future pictures. But if we don't see the struggle itself, then we are stuck in the struggle, entangled in it, and can't get out. So the gift of this picture is really telling us the truth of the struggle we're having, living in a world of samsara, holding these altruistic views. So when he's charging up to the mountaintops, one of the teachers I heard said that our altruistic or awakened mind, when it gets all in, when it sees all the selfing that we do, it basically just charges up to the plateau and stays up there. A way to think about it is we can't bring that altruistic, I can't bring that, the mind that can hold all things, I can't bring it into the moment when I'm scared. Because I'm hoping you can see that when you're scared, you're not open, you're not receptive, you're clenched down. And so the awakened mind is pretty, it's high, it's subtle, sublime. And we can't bring that sublime, subtle energy into a moment that's overwhelmed by fear. And then there are other times when the Dhamma is right here, right down in the ravine, waiting for us. Come on down here, in here. We got this. And yet we are too afraid to go down in the ravine to be with it. Too afraid to go into it. So this is all about this back and forth that we do with trying to conceptualize what we think an awakened mind is, who I would be as an awakened being, and how do I stuff it into my life? How do I be that? How do I embody it? And the struggle that we go through trying to be this way. This struggle itself is necessary. And as we go through this picture, we're actually learning, like I did last night, I had a moment when I realized, oh, I don't have to be a certain kind of Dhamma teacher. I am a Dhamma teacher, right? So it's sort of like I already am that. So I don't have to be a certain way. I just have to acknowledge that I am a Dhamma teacher afraid of the political situation. Do you see what I'm pointing to? And that allowing the truth of that to be the way it is what happens when we get to the next picture next month. But in this picture, it's where I was when I was struggling with my fear, trying not to be afraid with this concept of how I think I should be, rather than allowing myself to just be the truth of what's actually happening. That's what this is, our struggle between the concepts of what we think an embodied, awakened, enlightened being is and who we think we are. We think we're not an awakened, enlightened being. But we are already. We just can't bring it together because of the limited little rope and the limitness of the egoic thinking. And so that's what this picture is pointing to me. It is pointing to the struggle that we have with practice. So we should take some time to kind of think about this, right? I want you to think about, share it with each other, this idea. I mean, where does your image of what you think you should be and who you think you are, where is that tension, that struggle? I've been practicing for 30 years. I had a yogi talking to me yesterday, and they had this eye surgery. I think they have cataracts, and it's really bad, and they had to have this eye surgery. And I guess they can put lens, the laser surgery, they can put a lens in your eye so that you already have your eye. They peel off one lens, and they put on another one. Okay, that's what they say they're doing. So she had them peel off one lens and put on another lens. And she was like talking about how she could see, and it was okay. And then, you know, we talked last month, and then we talked this month, and she was saying that the eye doctor put in the wrong lens. So the lens that he put in is not her lens. He put in somebody else's lens. And then when he realized he put in the wrong lens, he needed to pull that one off and put another one on. So now he's got to go through two surgeries, but you're not supposed to have two of these. You're only supposed to do it one time. So she's like, okay, but are we cutting? Are we going to use a laser? And he's like, no. We're going to do a completely different practice. But she started having all these problems with seeing and pain. And she goes to a second doctor, and they said, oh, that's because he did a laser surgery. She's like, what? He said, no. Anyway, so she's getting it all fixed. But this is what she was complaining to me, saying, I just tried to work with my practice, Tori, but I was terrible with it. I've just had a terrible time with my practice. And I'm like, really? Why? She's like, well, I mean, I get into these overwhelming moments of fear and panic about going blind. And I'm like, okay, you're still sitting here. What makes you think you didn't work with your practice? And she's like, well, I mean, I was overwhelmed. I couldn't let the thoughts go. I was overwhelmed. I'm thinking to myself, yeah, can you see that she's in the struggle with the ox? That the egoic mind has this idea that a really good yogi, she's been practicing for 30 years like me, really good yogi would just be easy with it. Easy. Oh, another surgery. No problem. I can do it, you know? And I'm saying, why wouldn't you be afraid? Why wouldn't you be in panic? Why wouldn't you feel betrayed by this doctor that lied, trying to correct their mistake? Why wouldn't you have a trauma with all of this? And if you have trauma in the body, it's going to keep coming up, and you're going to get overwhelmed. I said, this doesn't have anything to do with your practice. This is trauma and the nature of trauma in a human body. So, you know, you may have to go to a therapist to kind of work through the trauma of the whole thing. But in terms of practice, you are a practitioner. You are always a practitioner. That's what this picture is pointing to. We are a practitioner even in our struggles. So I want you to just think about something you're struggling with. Let's just use it right now. Something you're struggling with that leads you to believe that somehow or another, you're not good enough in your practice. You're not doing it good enough. You're trying to make it fit and see if that felt sense of not good enough is coming from trying to make your practice be other than it is, trying to fit your practice into some concept of the way you think you ought to be, rather than accepting, it's just the way I am right now. This is the way it is right now. So we're going to do this for 15 minutes, but I want to give people an opportunity to say goodbye if they don't want to participate in the breakouts. Since we do breakouts, I thank you so much for being here. And I will create some rooms for us to be in. And I didn't say it, everybody's left, but I was going to say, you should think about that even if you're not going to be in groups. Even if you're not going to stay, but you've already left. All right. Great to have you all back. And let's see if anybody would like to share or have a question or anything about. I like it when people come back and they got smiles on their face. That's encouraging. So let's see what came out of it, if anybody would like to share. You can just raise your hand. I can see all of you, so if you just want to raise your hand regularly, you can. Or you can raise your hand with the reaction button at the bottom. Yeah, Sheila? You're still muted there, so I can't really hear you. I know you're talking, but I can't hear what you're saying.
How's that? Is that better?
That's better.
Anyway, I was saying I've been encouraged by my teammates to ask the question, which I'm quite unsure about asking. Anyway, I had a situation this morning where a friend who I had a date with this afternoon just turned me down, canceled, and said, "Oh, something else has come up. I have a date with somebody else." You know.
Yeah.
Very simple thing. Now, I went into a place of betrayed, anger, just all these sort of situations. And I'm going, I was feeling bad about how I was feeling because, I realized that there was part of me wanted to sort of have revenge, all these feelings. And I thought, oh, that's not how I should be. Where's your loving kindness and acceptance here? And then I did go to a place of compassion for myself at one point, but that didn't last very long. I sort of went in and out of this feeling. But okay, so this is what you are talking about, the struggle, right? Okay.
So the struggle isn't with your upsetness. The struggle is that you can't accept that you are upset. That's the struggle. The struggle is the image that the mind is like, you should be a special Dhamma person. You should be all easy. Look it, you're not. You're not being the way you should be. That's the struggle. And in reality, we haven't seen people in so long. So when somebody, when we got a date and we're going to go meet with someone and then they cancel, all that sadness comes up, all that disappointment, all that mess. That's normal. So the struggle is not letting yourself be with the truth of what this is because you have an image of how you should be.
Okay.
You see that?
Yes, I think I do. So that just means then it's like to be with, I feel really disappointed,
That's it.
Be with disappointment.
And that doesn't say anything about whether you're a practitioner. You're just a disappointed practitioner, but you're still a practitioner. You just have disappointment and you're very sad. Or you could look at the mind all of a sudden wants to get revenge and I'm all mad. You can look at that. You could say, I'm a practitioner that wants to get revenge. What does that look like? Get interested in that because they're suffering in getting revenge. And you could listen to the way the mind's talking and saying, geez, that's kind of difficult. And then see about, like you said, I did a little compassion, right? So I practiced a little compassion there. And there was a little bit of ease. Look at that. What's that like? Ah, you're learning. The whole point of the Dhamma is whatever scenario comes up, this is an opportunity to learn what leads to suffering and what leads away from suffering. What does suffering feel like? And what does not suffering feel like? And either way, you're going to need some mess in your life in order to learn that. You can't learn it, with all good situations. You got to have somebody cancel on you and get really, really disappointed, pissed off, and I want revenge. You got to have that to learn what it feels like. And as a practitioner, that's what we're doing. We're practicing with it. We're not trying to be a certain kind of person.
Okay. Good. Thank you.
Good.
That's really, really helpful. Thanks.
Yeah, that's right. So you just be with it all day until it'll pass away eventually.
Yeah.
And we're just working with it.
Okay.
Yeah, Carolyn. Charlotte?
Thank you.
Yeah.
I attended a play last night at ACT Theater called Sweat.
Huh?
And if you can go see it, it is the most powerful thing. I'm from a working class family, very working class. And the storylines of the play and my life when I was younger were so parallel that I was really upset. And at the end of the play, they played Bruce Springsteen from the 70s. That just put me right over the edge. And so I thought I left the working class person behind. But obviously the working class person is right there with me.
Yep.
Still feeling the trauma of closing of people's workplaces,
yep,
being laid off, drug addiction, alcoholism.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it hasn't left me. And so your talk today was very, very helpful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. And it's learning to accept that it's okay that you still have that trauma. You still have all of that. That's where we're going to next week. We actually blend next month, we blend who we are and the Dhamma together as one. We begin to see we are both of these beings, and we can, an awakening isn't I've all of a sudden cleaned off all the ugly stuff. That's why I was so mortified when I got that one. I don't know. Were you guys the one I shared that picture where the bull ended up being all white and it started out black and then it turned white? Oh, my God. I was mortified when I saw that. I didn't see it the first time. I was mortified. But that image is the image. That's a false image. We're not cleaning away all of our bad habits. We are understanding them, and then they don't entangle us so much. I still get the impulse of it, but it doesn't entangle me like it used to. You see, we're not making ourselves different. You're okay. You can't say on one hand, we're all okay the way we are, and then on the other hand, I'm making myself better. You know, it doesn't work. There's no better. It's just who you are, but you're less fighting who you are is what you're doing. And you're more accepting of, oh, yeah, this is the way things are right now. And for anyone that's ever begin to do this, you are stiller. You're happier and you are stiller because you're accepting of the way things are, not because you somehow am a better person.
So I started diving into it.
You hear that? All right, good. Well, I guess Dane. Oh, no, go ahead, Bruce. We'll have Bruce have the last word here, and then Dane, you can do the announcement.
Any advice for a person who has hit the bottom of any, what have I can handle in the world?
You've hit the bottom of it.
I could, yeah. During your talk, I realized I cannot handle one more thing with my health, with the world, with Sean's health. I just,
yeah.
All I could do was breathe.
So, Bruce, what you got to do, you and Sean, is you got to first take the world and turn it off. You just don't really need it right now. It's almost, I hate to say it, but it's like you guys are old enough to remember Dallas. Remember Dallas? And no matter how much we watch Dallas, it was always really the same episode inching along, but we kept watching it like some big spectacular thing was going to happen. And then it just inched a little bit more because it's trying to keep us watching it for a whole year. That's the nature of a soap opera. So you don't think of the news and the worldly problems as soap opera. You don't really need to know. It's not impacting your life the way your health is impacting your life. So no more looking at the news. No, you don't have to look at all that. You don't have to know whether Roe v. Wade is passed or not. You don't need any of it. What you need is to cultivate a level of kindness in the house you're living with the health situation, right? So watch some movies that you enjoy, even if they're old, old movies that you haven't seen in a while. You know, watch those old Dean Martin comedies. You're not watching the comedies. You remember those Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis comedies that used to come on Saturdays? Oh my God, I love them. You're not watching them in order to spiritually bypass the difficulty of it. You're watching them to lift your spirits so you can be with the truth of the difficulties that you have. That's all you're missing. Is you need some things to lift your spirits. And that means when you look at your day, what are we going to do today to lift our spirits? What do we need to do? If we can't go for a walk, then can we just watch a TV show about something that we both love? It does not matter. You are not missing anything. That's what I want you to hear. What you need is the uplift of joy that helps you hold the difficulty. Because you can't get rid of the difficulty, and you can't change that. So all you need is to cultivate the capacity to deal with it. Many people think that's compassion, but that's not what you need. You need joy. You need laughter. You need the uplift of this positive energy that comes. That's what you're looking for. The compassion comes when you bring in that uplift of joy, right? That's what it is, that you're the compassion, your ability to deal with the suffering that you guys are going through with the health. Yeah. Right now you're bringing in too much worldly stuff, and that's too negative. You got to get rid of that, close that. That's going to be here regardless of what happens. And what you need is the uplift of Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis. These young people, they don't know about them Dean Martin, Jerry Lewis movies. They were so good. And we used to watch them every Saturday. You need to watch Birdcage. You need to watch that Overboard with Goldie Hawn. Oh, my God. Those were movies back then. And that's what we need. That's what you need to uplift your spirit and to remember the joy that you've gone through all your life. You see what I'm pointing to?
Yeah, thank you, Tori. Thank you,
Tori. Yeah. So no more news. Let that go. Don't worry about the world. You know, it's going to be the same. You can turn the news on in 6 months and we'll be still talking about the same stuff. Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.